Welcome to the Don't Panic Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Steve Benson, and sitting right over there is Paul Schultz.
Hey, how you doing?
And, you know, before we get started, you should never forget, ever, do not forget, that nothing you're about to hear is true.
So calm the fuck down.
Speaking of calming down, I had a lot of trouble calming down today. I don't know. How rude of me. How was your day?
My day was awesome.
Mine sucked.
Why is that?
Wait a minute. What page are we on in the script?
Yes. That sounded terrible. It's completely unscripted, folks. What's
it's
sad
like reality
is
TV.
It really is unscripted. We just sound that good.
It's like reality TV. We just get drunk and read our scripts.
That's right. So anyway, you were having a shitty day?
My day was not good. And for those who may not know, I work in corporate America. I mean, I have a pretty sweet gig in that I am an independent consultant for the past about 11, 12 years. I've been doing consulting on my own. I usually spend 8 to 18 months at a client, and then I move on. I do management consulting, so I'm on site managing projects for the client. Usually it's stuff that they couldn't get done on their own, so they need somebody in there who knows how to get shit done, and usually in the medical biopharma industry. Medical device, pharmaceutical, anything that's, you know, vaguely healthcare related, I know how to get shit done. So, 20, like I said, it's usually
20 odd years later, and I finally figured out what it is you do. Sorry.
I never told you that?
No, well, you have, but it's always been like, okay, I'm not sure what that even means, but okay, that's okay.
Well, in that industry, the reason I focus on that industry is it's highly regulated by the Food and Drug Administration, and there's laboratory agencies, and there's hospital agencies, there's, you name it, there's an agency for it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have a pretty good understanding of those regulations, and so I know how to operate within that environment. Add to that, I have actually taught how to do projects in that environment. So I've done classes on how to manage a project within the regulated industry. So that makes me pretty marketable. And usually it's, like I said, it's like 8 to 18 months, and then I'm on to the next one. I'm like a gun for hire, right? I'm the guy in the Western that wanders into town. I kill the bad guy, and I'm on, and, you know, not only do I kill the bad guy, but I may not be exactly a good guy myself, right?
So you're Mr. Wolf is what you're saying.
Yeah, I'm Mr. Wolf. I take care of problems. I solve problems, right? Don't ask any questions. Well,
that's right.
That sometimes involves a lot of travel. And as you know, I've got young kids, and I'd prefer not to travel. I'd prefer not to be gone during the week. So I found this gig at a local company, a local laboratory company, and it's been a pretty good gig. They have gigantic projects, multi-million dollar, tens of millions of dollars projects that I just keep rolling off of one and rolling on to the next one. And I do a good job on one, and then the one that they brought me in for, I got it done. It was something they couldn't get done. I finally got it done and rolled on to the next one because they said, hey, this guy knows how to get projects done. Let's have him do this other one that we can't get done. And I wasn't arguing because I'm not traveling and the money's pretty good.
Right.
So 5.5 years later, I am still at the same class. I have not had a job for 5.5 years. I'm not talking about a project that lasts more than 5 years. I'm talking about a job. I mean, I haven't been anywhere for 5 years, and I've been here for 5.5 years. That's good and that's bad. It's good because it's been, you know, secure. It's been a steady paycheck. It's been good money. It's been not traveling. And it so happens that the people at this place are great. I've met some wonderful people. I typically keep a professional distance from the people at work, at my clients, and I don't really become friends with them beyond a professional level.
Right.
But I've made a number of friends at this place. I kind of let that guard down, and I got to know some of the people. Mm-hmm. So it's good, but it's also bad because a day is like today. And today I realized why I was the guy that, you know, I can't let go of the Western analogy. So I'm the
There's
hired
nothing
gun.
Wrong with that.
I'm the hired gun, you know, Lee Van Cleef or somebody. I come, you know, riding into town. I take care of what I need to take care of. The damsel in distress is saved, and she wants me to stay and settle down. And, you know, like the song says, I was born a rambling man, you know?
John.
I got to ramble on, you know?
That's right. You got to use that on your next job, you know, when you're done. It's like, I was born a rambling man. I got to ramble on.
But I forgot that. I forgot that this time. I forgot why I'm a rambling man. And I settled down. And now, today, explain to me why. And we'll get to that story. I mean, everybody's going, shut up and tell us the story already. We'll get to that. But
you're building suspense perfectly. I'm on the edge of my seat.
Well, to set a little context, Paul turned me on to a rant that Joe Rogan had about society and what we expect from society and what society expects from us. And it really describes really well how we all kind of paint ourselves into a box, and we go to the corporation and we are assigned a cubicle and we sit in that cubicle and when we were younger, we never dreamed that, you know, I want to grow up and sit in a cubicle and be a cog in a machine, you know. But somehow, vast majority of us ends up there. As much as I would like to think, oh, I'm an independent businessman, I'm a consultant, days like today remind me that I have not built for myself that career yet where I can honestly say I'm not painted into a box. Right. So, I think that, you know, to help set the context, I think, we ought to listen to a clip from Joe Rogan's podcast. For people that want to listen, Joe Rogan's, you know, funny guy and brilliant. And his podcast is actually one of the top, it's in the top 100, I think. And I think it's in the top 10 of comedy podcasts on iTunes. So, if you want to listen, go to iTunes and, you know, search for Joe Rogan. But we're going to play a little clip for you, and then on the other side, we'll just, you know, we'll just talk about it. So just, you know, take a little listen and see what you think.
Well, on a brighter note,
commercial break.
The government has now banned the carrying of spears.
Stop about every 1,000 miles, ain't asking too much, is it?
You might wish to stay on and listen.
It was a place where everything was legal.
I met this woman.
So if you're looking for emotional satisfaction, my advice to you is seek professional help.
I don't buy the idea that, you know, the society the way it is right now, it has to be this way. Someone's always going to have to work at Burger King. Someone's always going to have to. I don't buy that. I think people are pretty fucking flexible. If you look at the broad spectrum of humans and human behavior from different cultures all over the world, it's pretty obvious to me that there's a lot of different ways that people can act. We don't have to have fast food workers. We don't have to have people who work shit jobs. We don't have to. We just need to figure out how to restructure society so everybody somehow or another plays a part, has something to contribute, has something to share. I mean, that's what a real society is supposed to be like. I give you some coconuts, you give me some fish. You know, we make a deal, and you do it back and forth and left and right. And when there's nothing to contribute, then you start looking, the president needs to give us jobs. We need jobs. So instead of something to contribute, you just find something to do with your time. And then it becomes about doing that more than it becomes about finding something to contribute. So society gets wrapped around becoming a part of a machine. Society, instead of becoming a bunch of individuals that are expressing themselves in unique ways, and everybody sort of borrows and shares and sells this and you sell that, and we all sort of figure out how we can contribute in a society, we got sidetracked and diverted into these boxes that they call companies and corporations, and we got stuck into these containers that they call cubicles or offices, and we got forced into this system. So our time, instead of it being invested in making pottery or fixing cars or doing something where you have a passion or you have some sort of a connection to, instead of that, you've sold your life to sit in a box and work for a machine, an uncaring machine that demands productivity. It doesn't understand you. It doesn't want to understand you. It has a bunch of very strict things in order to keep the humor at a minimum in the office, just in case one of you fuckheads says some stupid sex jokes that gets them sued and they have to give somebody $1 million. So get it together, and this is your life now. No natural behavior. Everybody's wearing clothes they don't want to wear. Everybody's showing up and doing something they don't want to do. They have no connection to. That's the problem with our society. And then what's the reward for all this stuff? Go home, get a big TV. Go home, you're going to get a shiny belt buckle. You're going to get a nice purse. You're going to wear shoes that you couldn't afford last week. You're going to get that dream car. And every week we're chasing down this new object. And every week we're trying to fill this hole in this sad shadow of a life that we've been left with after work. That you work 8 to whatever to hours a day plus commuting. And then you're like this. And that's your life. That's your real fucking life. All that other stuff is not your life anymore. All that other stuff is work. And most of us have committed to that. I know you've been there before, and I've been there before. And we understand that it's a trap because we got out of it. But for the people that are in it, a lot of times they don't even understand it's a trap. They just think it's a good job. They think they got dental. I'm doing really good. I got my own parking spot. It's got my name on it. And you're just a piece of a heartless, shitty machine that makes money.
But don't you think you have to go through all that just to figure out what you want to do?
Because no, I mean, I didn't think I did, but I don't think you have to. Look, I did, but when I became a comedian when I was 21, I was 100% convinced that I was going to be a stand-up comedian for the rest of my life. Like, I didn't need to worry about what was next. I was like, this is what I'm doing. Like, I don't want to do anything else. Like, this is what I'm doing. Once I found it, I was good. All the jobs were just to feed myself while I was trying to make that work. But it's to get one and commit to it and have it become a part of your life becomes really problematic. Because if you're a dirtbag like myself, who drove limos and did construction and did all these, you know, almost kind of temporary jobs that a lot of people drift in and out of, there's nothing expected of you. But if you get hired by a major corporation and become a big part of their you know, their program, like, let's say you're also an animator and you get a gig. Like, I have a friend who was an illustrator, and he was working for Nickelodeon, and he got fired, and he was panicking. And he was like, shit, I don't know what the fuck to do. He's like, I gotta figure out another job. So he started making paintings and selling his paintings. It was the greatest thing that's ever happened to him. Now he's his name's Todd White. He's a super successful artist. He makes like this kind of martini style, like cocktails from the like cocktail parties from the 1920s, like those cool kind of cartoonish martini glass things. He's got a real specific, distinctive style. It's really cool. He's a great artist. And he's also a black belt in jiu-jitsu. I know him from Jean-Jacques Machado's. He's a great guy. But it was an opportunity for him to lose a job, and even a job that he loved as an illustrator. But, you know, I'm sure he'd much rather do what he wants to do and do what's going on in his mind.
Well, that's cool stuff.
Oh, he's really cool. He's badass. And he's a great guy, too. Very cool guy.
So, when you posted that clip on Facebook, it hit me kind of hard, because I was listening to it and I thought, well, first of all, I read the headline, and the headline of that little clip is, you know, something like, do what you love and the rest will follow. And I've been hearing that all my life, and I'm like, that's easy for Joe Rogan to say. He's a millionaire stand-up comic, right? He's got, it's like, who wouldn't love being a stand-up comic? And I know, you know, the stand-up comic listeners are going, dude, you don't know how hard it is, man, you know, being on the road. But anyway, I didn't even want to listen to it because I kind of knew what he was going to say. And, you know, it's basically saying contribute. Find a way in your life to contribute.
Right.
And if you find a way to contribute, the happiness, you know, is just, you don't even have to worry about the happiness, just it comes. And
yeah.
And satisfaction with life and
yeah, because he kind of went into a bit of an extreme, but I think it was to prove a point. But yeah.
So when I first heard that, my first reaction was, well, shit. The problem is I agree with him. And but then I thought, well, at the same time, being aware is, you know, knowing, the famous quote is, well, now you know, and knowing is half the battle. And once you are aware, you can address it, right? And I thought, the thing that makes me different is, I'm, as I was saying at the top of the show, I'm an independent contractor. I'm a consultant. I'm a gun for hire. And I can move on at any time, right? But like I said, somehow I've gotten myself here for 5.5 years, and I experienced the reason today was so shitty is because I experienced something that I haven't experienced since I had like a real job. And it's like I texted you, you know, about how shitty my day was, and it's basically the shit people pull, right? I cannot believe how it's like we're in kindergarten again, and we're gonna go tattle on somebody without talking to them first. And now the moment all our listeners have been waiting for, I'm gonna tell the fucking story.
Well, I'm gonna go on record and say I have never, ever, ever gotten a message like that from you before. I thought it was somebody else. I had to double check who it was. So I figured it was bad.
For the listeners, it says, dude, today is such a great example of why I have got to move on. The shit people pull. It's not putting up with their shit that brings me down, which is true. I have no problem putting up with people's shit. I'm a great shit putter upper. It's how, and this is the serious part, brings a tear to my eye. It's how their shit starts to become my shit. And I find myself starting to paint myself into a box. Fuckheads, little fearful assholes making it harder for the rest of us. And Paul gets that text from me. He's like, whoa, one conversation at a time. I'm like, okay, I get it. So what happened today, it's not, like I said, I can put up with shit. It's how it starts to change me, and it's how it starts to cause me to sort of start painting boxes around myself and putting up armor that I tore off years ago, right? And so anyway, here's what happened. To give you a little background, like I said at the beginning, I manage, you know, dozens of millions of dollars of projects, even half a dozens, sometimes even 6 millions, or even half a dozen. One project was half a dozen of a million, and another project was 6 million, which is kind of the same thing. But anyway.
Every single episode. Every single episode. It's like a running shtick.
You gotta have a thing. Anyway, as part of this, the structure of a project is that you have the project manager, which is me, and then there's a structure around it to support it. There's program managers, which is a rung higher than the project manager, and then there's the sponsors, which is usually like a vice president type level, an executive. Let's call it an executive. These are the people that are like oversee the project. I run the project, the day-to-day, the getting the shit done part. I don't do anything, but I, you know, see that other people do stuff. The people that I report to then are supposed to, in my view, figure out what it is I need to do my job remove obstacles, provide, you know, support, run interference. Okay. So with that kind of background, we had this issue recently where there was this one part of the project that somebody's working on, and somebody had an issue with that part of the project. And instead of, like, coming to me with the issue, they went to the program manager and the executive. Now, that's happened before, and I can deal with that. That's okay. But today, this morning, happened to be the executive update, where I'm sitting in a room with the executives around the table. Just imagine, yeah, it's exactly like you would imagine, you know, big, long table, executive at the front, maybe, you know, chomping on a cigar, going, okay, now tell me how the project's going. And
one of the program managers... smoke in the building?
Yeah, no, that's just for effect. And anything's okay. Allowed in podcast.
Oh, if it's his building, he can do what he wants.
That's right. He's in charge, right? You know, as a little aside, if these people knew that we look at them as like the pointy-haired boss on Dilbert, they would absolutely have a cow. If they knew that we're looking at them going, you act exactly like the pointy-haired boss in Dilbert, they would just quit their jobs and go move to the Amazon. Right? Anyway, as I was saying.
Or they're probably so oblivious they wouldn't believe you.
So I get in the meeting and I'm blindsided by this issue. Nobody comes to me with the issue. They do the end-around thing to the boss, right? And, you know, during the meeting, I'm going, what the fuck? I mean, who am I? Am I chopped liver? Right? And we're building up to this crescendo, I think we ought to take a little break and let me collect myself a little bit, because I'm getting just a little bit agitated.
And now, the distinguished television news commentator, Mr. Howard Beale.
Ladies and gentlemen, I would like at this moment to announce that I will be retiring from this program in 2 weeks' time because of poor ratings. Since this show was the only thing I had going for me in my life, I have decided to kill myself. I'm going to blow my brains out right on this program a week from today.
What the hell's going on?
Prepare yourself for a perfectly outrageous motion picture.
Howard Beale went up there last night and said what every American feels, that he's tired of all the bull...
Sakes, Diana, we're talking about putting a manifestly irresponsible man on national television.
I am not putting Howard back on the air.
It's not your show anymore, Max. It's mine.
I got a feeling I'm being made.
You are.
Got to warn you, I don't do anything on my first date.
We'll see. I want a show developed based on the activities of a terrorist group.
Well, Ahmed, I want to make a TV star out of you. Just like Archie Bunker.
We're the number one show in television!
We're number one! We're number one!
There is no America. There is no democracy. There is only IBM and DuPont and Exxon.
And you have meddled with the primal forces of nature. And you will atone.
Am I getting through to you, Mr. Beale?
Why me?
It was your own television, dummy.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Network News Hour with Howard Beale.
I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore. Things have got to change.
How many stations does this go
out? You've
got
to get mad.
67.
You've got to say, I want you to get up right now, go to your window, stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Are they yelling in Atlanta, Herb?
Are they yelling in Atlanta, Ted?
I'm mad as hell! I'm not gonna take it anymore!
Network by Paddy Chayefsky, directed by Sidney Lumet, produced by Howard Gottfried. Television
will never be the same.
All right. That break actually, that helped. Thank you. So welcome back to the Don't Panic podcast. I'm in the middle of my rant about my bad day at work today. So we're in the boardroom, just to remind everybody, we're sitting in the boardroom. Big Boss is sitting at the end of the table, chomping on a cigar, wearing a white suit like Boss Hogg from Dukes of Hazzard.
Eating his raw liver.
Right. So here's what happens. Meeting starts. One of the program managers says, okay, we're going to wait till the VP gets here. But, we have this issue with all of our different things are out of sync, and we're having an issue with the code, and the software's not working, and nothing's right. But we're not going to talk about that right now. We're going to wait till the VP gets here. And I said, hello? That's great. I look forward to talking about that because I haven't heard a thing about any of that. And as the project manager, I would think I would be one of the ones that would know. And they're like, oh, okay, well, yeah, that'll be a good thing to talk about then. So the rest of the meeting, like an hour goes by, and I'm just trying to keep my shit together, right? Finally, the VP gets there, and they're like, okay, well, I think we want to talk about this topic of the, the software being out of sync and everything. And with the VP, actually, with the way the room was set up, sat down right next to me, right? It's like, so I turned to her, just kind of turned to her and go, yeah, I didn't know anything about this issue, so I'm really glad we're going to talk about it. And she looks at me, and she goes, wait, what? And I go, yeah, I'm not aware of any of this. And she's like, well, that's a problem. And I go, yeah, that's kind of a problem. And so for the next 20 minutes, all we had was her asking questions and the program managers trying to answer questions. The problem is the program managers were given answers that didn't make any fucking sense, right? And the VP is getting madder and madder, and I'm just biting my tongue. I'm fucking bleeding into my mouth from biting my tongue. And finally, they take a breath. And I'm just like, okay, first of all, the stuff that you're talking about, we already knew there was an issue last week, and we resolved it, and we figured out a way to keep it from happening again. We talked to the people that were involved, and we fixed it. We talked to them. They understand where they messed up. And we're moving forward. So the other half of what you said is actually not even true. And they just kind of look at me and they're like, what? I'm like, right. We don't have an issue. The VP looks at me and goes, you mean we don't have an issue? I was like, no, we don't have an issue. Oh, okay. The thing that pissed me off, not one person came up to me after that meeting and said, you know what? We're really sorry. We should have had all the information first. Nobody. Right? So I pieced it all together. And here's what happened. One of the people from one of the other projects within the same program experienced this issue, brought it to our attention. We fixed it. But she wasn't satisfied with that because since we fixed it, we weren't going to get in trouble. The thing is, it normally would not have bothered me that much. It would have just rolled off my back. But one of my buttons is scapegoat. You might be like, well, why would somebody do that? I mean, for fun? No, this person's a really smart person, really conscientious, wants to get the job done. But they're having trouble getting their part done on the project. So looking for a convenient scapegoat. And that's one of my buttons. If you want to push one of my buttons, look for a scapegoat. That will piss me off, all right? Okay, so the other reason that it ticked me off was, from the moment that I woke up this morning, I checked my email, admittedly, to see if work was going to start late because, it's been cold and snowy lately, and it's really nice to climb back in the bed. I don't know about you. I know that, I digress. But my good friend Paul, with his young kids, whenever there's a snow day, you get pissed off. You're like, God damn snow day, what's the matter with you guys? When there's a snow day around my house.
A little bit.
There's a snow day around my house, I'm like, ooh, I get to climb back in bed. Nice warm bed. So anyway,
no,
that's neither here nor there, or over there or anywhere.
No,
but, I got up, I checked my email, and the first thing I see, this is a completely separate issue, but it goes along the same lines of people not talking to the people that can actually do something about it. So there's a whole rant about if you really want to solve a problem, go to the source of the problem and talk to that person about the problem. But come to find out, the reason that person didn't go to the source was she was afraid that that person was a little too sensitive, a little too unapproachable. And so didn't want to go to her because she was just a little bit worried. And I'm like, pull up your goddamn panties. We're all adults here. Go talk to the person that you need to talk to. And by the way, if you knew this person, she is the sweetest, most approachable, adorable person you would ever want to meet. You might make her cry. She's so adorable. But fine, we all cry at work, right? Okay, well, maybe not all of them. Maybe not everybody. I mean, I don't cry at work. But anyway, moving on. So when I checked my email this morning, so this is setting the stage of I was already pissed off when I walked into this meeting because to get the project done, we need another resource. And we know the person that we need. You know what I mean when I'm like, okay, you need somebody to help you with something. And you don't just need somebody. You know who you need. So let's say you're working on a new book, a new comic, and or, you know, as the highbrow call it, a graphic novel. Let's say you're working on a graphic novel. And or do you prefer comic book?
Not. All right. Yes.
You're not going to go, okay, let me list out all the characteristics of the person I need to help me with the drawings or the story or whatever. And then I'll just put that out there somewhere and somebody will go match up the characteristics I need with a person. My guess is you have somebody in mind. You're like, I know who I want.
Yes. Yep. Yep. Yep.
I'm the same way. When I'm doing a project, my philosophy is first who, and then they'll help you figure out what they're going to do.
Right.
So on my project, we have a huge challenge. We have to get a ton of stuff done between now and September, and that might sound like a long time, but it's monumental. Right. It'd be like if somebody said drive from here to California. Here being Indianapolis, Indiana, to California in, 24 hours. You'd be like, what? I'm going to need a great driver. I'm going to need a good mechanic. I'm not, a navigator. Here are the people I need, right? So that's what I do. That's why I'm able to get shit done, because I go, if that's what you want to do, here's what we're going to need. Here's who we're going to need. Here's what we're going to need. And so that's what I do. I mean, that's what I do. So I go to my aforementioned adorable beloved project program managers, and I tell them I need this specific person, and it's not just me, all of my partners on the other side of the business, everybody on the team, everybody recognizes this is the person we need. I did this back in November, and I said, what's it going to take to get this person on my team? And they said, well, let me go talk to that person's vice president, and that vice president will talk to that person, to the director, and then the director will talk to the man. Let me put it in military terms. Hey, Johnson, I need you to come over here. Well, you need to talk to your lieutenant. Your lieutenant will talk to their colonel. The colonel will talk to the general, who will talk to the president. The president will talk to his colonel and then talk to his major, who will talk to his sergeant. And then he'll talk to Johnson, and then Johnson will agree, and then he'll go all the way back up, he'll come back all the way back down, and then we'll let you know 8 months later, after the enemy has already stormed the gates and taken over your compound, hey, you can have Johnson now. Fuck, I don't need Johnson now. I've been killed and, or worse. So anyway, that's what they told me. I was like, fine. Okay. All right. You guys go do what you do, right? That's November. December comes around, and I'm like, how's it going? Did you find that person? Did you get, you know, are you getting the person for us? And they're like, well, we talked to them and they need more information. They're going to get more information from their people. Their people will talk to the other people. And I was like, okay, but we really need this person by the beginning of the year. By the end of the year, we need a decision by January 4th or 5th, whichever, the Monday after New Year's. We need this person to start. Okay, well, we understand. So just before the holiday, I'm talking to them, and I'm ranting and raving about we need this person. And they go, well, we thought you were going to go make that happen. I was like, no! You told me you were going to make it happen. I'm happy to make it happen. I would rather go make it happen, but you told me you were going to do it. And they're like, well, no, we're not going to do it. I was like, fine, whatever. So I run off, and I start making it happen. Like, before the end of the year, I have this great conversation with the manager. I'm like, everything got confused. It's all good. All we have to do is you and I have to agree, and then we can bring this person over. And so I was like, he's like, well, let me, it's the holidays. Let's come back after the first of the year. Let's talk again, and let's figure out how we're going to make this work. I was like, okay, cool. So I go to him last week, and I'm like, hey, so it's the first of the year. How are we going to make this work? And he goes, well, I have a meeting with your program managers to talk more about it. I'm like, what the TF? I mean, fuck. Were they going to tell me that they were going to meet with you? Were you going to tell me that you were going to meet with them? I thought I was supposed to be getting this done. And so I sent a note to them via one of those dudes, like from the last episode, one of those dudes from the old days, where you write a note, you hand it to them, get on their horse and write it over. No, actually, I sent an email. But inside joke for our longtime listeners.
The 20th century.
So anyway, I sent them an electronic message and said, hey, what's up? I'm told you have a meeting with this guy. It cannot possibly be about this resource because you guys told me to take care of it. So the message back was, well, we need more information. We need to tell you exactly what you need so that it may not be that specific resource, but, you know, we'll figure out who it can be based on what you tell us you need. And I lost it. I was just like, I have got to get out of here. And that's when I realized I was that guy that Joe Rogan was talking about that instead of like, I think I'm contributing. I think I sometimes contribute. But it's days like today that make me go, I don't know if I'm contributing or if I'm just a dancing monkey, like, you know, doing what the trainer tells me. Dance, monkey, dance. So the context here is being in our society today, we seem to have gotten away from the idea of let's all make a contribution. I'll give you some coconuts. You give me some fish. And we're both happy because I like growing coconuts. You like catching fish. We seem to have gotten away from that to the point of let's just go get a job and make some money. And we'll live our real life away from work. Real life doesn't happen at work. That's bullshit. We just go there to do whatever we're told. And then when we leave, then we'll live our real life. I have a few buttons. And once people figure out how to push them, it's what sets me off at work. One of them is the trust. I mean, if you give me... One of the reasons I've been so successful is I've figured out a couple of things. One is, you give me responsibility for something, you give me the accountability, and I will get it done. I mean, it's already decided that it's done. The other thing, if you let me do what needs to be done to get the shit done. With that, on my team, if you are on my team, I trust that you're going to do your job. And you're going to do the part that you're supposed to do. My job as a leader is to make sure that that vision is clear, that new reality, because when we get done, reality will be different. The world is in one state today, and when we get done with our project, there will be a new reality. My job is to define what that new reality is going to be, and then when you're done doing your part, my job is to say thank you, between those two parts, I'm a servant. I'm like, what do you need? What obstacles are in your way that you need me to get out of the way? What resources do you need? That's how I lead. I get out of your way unless you need me. What I feel like right now is our leadership is getting in my way. Not only are they not moving things out of my way, they're putting other things in my way. And so the Joe Rogan thing almost brought a tear to my eye. I was like, fuck, he's right. I have gotten myself into that box. Because normally, if I'm at a project for 8 to 18 months, I'm on to the next project. It's kind of like, let's say you're a mechanic and you repair cars and you have a problem customer. It's like, oh, well, I love working on cars. This customer will be gone in a few hours, right? Mm-hmm. And so me, I usually go, yeah, you got that bullshit at every company. I'll be gone in a few months. Doesn't really matter. And this one, it just got to me today. It just really got to me. And I'm like, I got to move on. I gotta figure this out. So that's my rant. And that's like what the corporate world looks like. And I know it's easy to go, oh, well, be happy you have a job. I mean, look at the economy. You know, you're like, you know, white people, first world problems, right? But so, Paul, my question is, because when we had this exchange, you and I are a lot alike. We're great friends, and we've known each other for, God, you know.
Too long.
Forever. Since Ronald Reagan was a baby. But but we couldn't be more different in this respect, which is, I feel like I'm painted into a box. You don't. So what's your experience when you listen to that Joe Rogan video? How does it impact you? How does it affect you?
Well, before I answer that, all I'm going to say is that's everything you just said is the reason why we're friends. Because I'm listening to you talk about how you get things done and you stand back and you let people do it because you know that person can do the job. And that is exactly, I don't know, maybe it was in the water, but that is exactly how I handle projects that I work on. You know? There you go. It's crazy to listen to it. You're in going, now he doesn't know this is how I do it, but I do it exactly the same way. So I'm just sitting here going, yeah. Wow, that's like, is there an echo in my head? Granted, I think he's, you know, his examples are a bit extreme, but I think that's just to prove his point. But, yeah. I think, you know, I mean, I used to be that way. I used to, you know, it was a mean, you know, your job is a means to an end, and then when the whistle blows, you're out the door like Fred Flintstone or off the back of the Brontosaurus and living your life, making your, you know, doing your grilling, you know, over the weekend and hanging out with friends and relatives. But
that's how we grew up, man.
Yeah, that's exactly, and that's what we thought it was supposed to be. And mm-hmm. I've had not to the extent, and this is why his little rant or speech, whatever, spoke to me was maybe not quite on the same level as you, but I've had jobs where, you know, I was offered, like, I walked away from really good jobs because I just couldn't buy into what they were selling. And, yeah. I mean, I think that's primarily what it is. I mean, I've given up two or three really good jobs because I'm like, I don't want to be in that, you know, like he said, that box or that corner. You know, I've told... I've told some of my bosses that I'm like, you know, when I walk out that door, I'm not here. And they couldn't fathom that, you know. And that's when I realized, that's not for me, you know.
Joe Rogan kind of makes that point, doesn't he? He's like, mm-hmm. Okay, if you're an artist or you're an actor, you're whatever, and you're mm-hmm. chasing a dream, and you haven't gotten to the point where you're able to support yourself with it yet, so you go take mm-hmm. a job somewhere. Yeah. It's different.
Yeah.
There are certain expectations, like he said, that are put on you, that you put on yourself. I actually, just to bring it back to me for a second, I was getting a little worried. Sure. It wasn't about me. But no, when I first, this is one of the reasons that it freaks me out to listen to the rant, is when I was just like 3 years out of college, I realized I had started working for the man. I was becoming the man, and I was putting myself in a box. So my plan was to move to Chicago, become a bartender, and just figure it out from there, right? Support myself.
Off track there.
Can you see me as a bartender?
Yeah, actually, I can. You've made drinks for me before. I could see you as a bartender.
Getting some crappy, you know, apartment or whatever, and then just figure out life at that point. And then somebody gave me the advice. They said, well, you have this chemical engineering degree. You can still move to Chicago. You can still just get a job, but you'll make a lot more money than you would as a bartender. And I went up and I did that. And I was like, oh, that makes sense. That's logical. I just don't care about the job as much. But the problem is, once I had the job in that corporate culture, it sucked me in.
Yeah.
And it wasn't supposed to be like that. There were certain expectations. It's like, if you're a bartender and you're like, you can say, you know, screw you. There's a million bars in this town. Mm-hmm. In this town. If I'm a good bartender, I'll go be a bartender somewhere else. But when you have a corporate job, you sort of feel this pressure to be the corporate cog in the machine, you know?
I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
Once again, I want to remind everyone listening that we love you. We love your friends, too. And if you love your friends, you'll turn them on to our podcast. Share it on Facebook, send them the link, write it down on a piece of paper, give it to a carrier pigeon, and let them take it over to them. However, here's whatever another idea I thought of today. Get yourself one of those old school cassette recorders, play it on your computer, but push the play and record button at the same time on that old school cassette recorder, make them a tape of it, and mail it to them. And then they could play that tape. And that's fine, right. Too. That's fine, too. That's right. We don't discriminate. But we've enjoyed talking, and we've enjoyed you listening. And I just want to say, for Paul Schultz, I'm Steve Vincent, and this has been the Don't Panic Podcast. But don't forget, nothing you just heard was true.
So calm the fuck down.
Well, on a brighter note,
commercial break.
The government has now banned the carrying of spears.
Stop about every 1,000 miles, ain't asking too much, is it?
Hallelujah. 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 Hallelujah.